Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senator Brad Lager representing the folks of the 12th Senatorial District, here today to talk about Senate Bill 5. As I present the bill, Mr. Chairman, I'll do two things. One, given that we've passed some of the credits that we passed last week and earlier this week, Senate Bill 5 will need to be changed. So I'm going to talk about, instead of the specific details within Senate Bill 5, the overarching concept that we as a body are going to have to start working through. And that is, how do we begin to manage and rein in the tax credit programs we have today, either from a fiscal savings perspective, a reallocation into credits that we believe may create greater economic activity throughout our state, and or my personal opinion, which is begin to reduce our tax credit liability while also reducing our income tax, whether it's a corporate income tax, whether it's personal income tax, because the reality is the world that we live in has changed immensely. It changed immensely last year when the state of Kansas took the steps they did. It changed again this year when Governor Brownback gave his State of the State address and called for further reductions. Right, wrong, indifferent, the reality is the competitive environment that we live in today in this state is different than in the past. And I believe strongly that what we as a legislature have to do, we have to stop debating projects and start debating policy. Government cannot pick winners and losers. We need to create a public policy that allows all innovators to keep as much of their own money as possible, invest in what they believe is right and what the free market will bear, and ultimately consumers will pick the winners and losers. Under Senate Bill 5, the fundamental principle was that we were beginning to take many of the tax credits that we have on the books today, sunsetting and eliminating those credits, and using those revenues to start phasing out the corporate income tax. Ultimately, it would have phased it out completely. It would not have quite been revenue neutral, but it would have been close. And so I believe that as we start talking about what is our optimal tax policy, and we're going to have that discussion with Senator Krause's committee tomorrow, but let's be honest, that discussion is going to go hand in hand with the work being done in this committee, specifically on the reform, the reduction, whatever the word is that you want to use for how we manage tax credits in our state. As many of us know, we have some of the largest number of tax credit programs in the state, and in many of the cases, the credits that are being used are the largest in the state. Our two largest credits, the low-income housing and the historic preservation, are at a magnitude that is only shared by maybe one or two other states. They are larger than anyone ever thought possible or that would ever happen. And while I'm not here to tell you that I ever believe that we should eliminate all those credits completely, the reality is I believe we have to dramatically change the caps. If you look at the historic preservation on its own, in the state of Missouri, we have a $140 million cap with a small project carve-out, which means in a typical year, we would spend approximately $150 million. The next closest state last year spent $80 million. Prior to that, the next closest state was $60 million. In the year that they had that they spent $60 million, they immediately imposed a freeze on the credit. And there are actually states that actually don't even allow the credits to flow unless they have positive general revenue growth. My point is that what we all know is what we're doing today is not working. And there has to be a reallocation. And part of the process that we are going to work through here is, as we reallocate those credits, is it to use it to reduce the corporate income tax, as I have proposed? Is it to reduce the personal income tax, some of the other proposals we'll hear today? But fundamentally, what I know is this: there is no silver bullet. This will now be my seventh session of advocating for and fighting for tax credit reform. Those who oppose it are very good at what they do. There's a reason they fight so hard to keep this. And while I fundamentally disagree with them, I understand and respect why they're doing what their position is and why they do it. But it's time that we stop dancing and we understand that we are at a crossroads. We are at a crossroads because of competitive perspectives. We're at a crossroads of states like Oklahoma and Nebraska and other Midwestern states decide they're going to move toward the elimination of their income tax. And I guess what I, more than anything else, Mr. Chairman, what I'm saying is I put Senate Bill 5 forward as the beginning of a discussion. And I know that there are a lot of other great ideas. I'm not married to say that this is the only way to do it, but I do believe it's vitally important that we work down this road. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Senator, and just to I guess, start the hearing off, I appreciate your comments. I appreciate you filing the bill. As you and I both worked on some of these issues together over the last 4 years or so, I think there is a sincere desire here in the Missouri Senate, and I think in the General Assembly, to deal with this issue this year, to come to some resolution, to reduce our exposure on tax credits. I've filed a bill, Senator Lamb, other people, you filed a bill as it relates to the broader issues of how, you know, tax policy. And then when it relates to, you know, incentives, how do we reduce and how do we recalibrate in a way that makes better sense for the state? And I think you touched on a lot of those points in your presentation. There's a reason why, for the people in the audience, there's a reason why these bills are being heard in January. Because we're really are trying to get to a yes on this thing. So we will be working hard as we move forward.
And Senator, one of the things that I think is important to note, and specifically I thought of it as you referenced the interesting times we've had in the past as we've tried to get to a consensus on this. And for the committee, I think it's important to understand there's going to be information that we received from both sides, those who want reform, those who are trying to stop reform. Some of the requests they've had in terms of how the program should work, maybe some of the treatment in the past by the department, there were some very legitimate issues brought forward. And part of the challenge that we are going to have to work through is how much do we want to have carved out as entitlement in statute, and how much are we going to leave discretionary? And that's always the balance here, because if you too much discretion leads to opportunities for mischief, but complete entitlement binds our hands from a fiscal perspective. And that, I think, Mr. Chairman, is one of the, also going to be a very important key to this as we work through that.
Thank you. Any questions for Senator Nasheed?
Senator, has there been any discussion with yourself and those that are in opposition to it to find a common ground, a common cause towards this here movement of reform?
There's been a lot of discussions about restructuring and reform, not so much in the context of reducing credits to begin eliminating income tax. Candidly, that's a fairly new discussion that's really being driven out of what happened last year. However, the discussions, negotiations, whatever the right word is, that we have gone through over the last 5 to 6 years, as we worked in the past to pass legislation, as we tried to pass legislation or attempted to work through a special session call 2 years ago, there's been a lot of work done on this.
Yes.
And although, you know, in the past what has happened has always been, there's been a group that believes in caps, there's been a group that believes in sunsets, there's been different groups that have different theories on it, and I think that, you know, one of the positions I personally have always taken is that if we're not going to have sunsets, then we're going to have dramatically lower caps. And I'm fine whichever way we need to move with that. If we want to move away from sunsets, then let's talk about lower caps.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, and I'm asking that question because I represent the 5th Senatorial District.
Sure.
Okay. And I have seen firsthand the impact of being able to use low-income tax credits and brownfield tax credits as well as historic preservations. I mean, when you go in Washington, Washington is all that it is due to the fact we've had the opportunity to use those credits. Not only that, if you go to Grove neighborhood, I don't know how often you go to St. Louis, the Grove neighborhood is just magnificent because we've had the opportunity in the St. Louis to take advantage of those tax credits. I just think, it would not be in the best interest of me to just to even think of the thought of reducing them because I've had the opportunity to see the impact. With low income, we are building low income housing more, I mean, we have built more low-income housing within the last 10 years than we've seen in the last 20 years. And people are losing their homes left to right. You know, you have people who was hit by the foreclosure. I mean, they have to go back into those low-income houses. I think that if we're going to look at tax credit reform, and we have, what, approximately 52 tax credits on the book?
63.
Yeah. Thanks for correcting me. 63 tax credits on the book. I don't think those three should be the aim, the target ones to do away with, because
the reality is, though, those two or three by themselves are just short of 50% of the overall cost.
And I understand.
So I agree with your position.
And it's a human value to it. I mean, a lot of the tax credit has a human value. I mean, you're not going to always get a return on your dollar, okay? But at the end of the day, can we truly say that we were able to help this low-income lady with four children? Now they can live in a beautiful home and have the pride that homeowners may have because of it. I mean, those are the type of things that we have had the opportunity to see in the city of St. Louis. And, you know, I just wish that at some point, you know, you guys can look to cut something else other than low-income preservations as well as brownfield.
Well, here's the discussion that we have to have, Senator. The discussion is what we are currently doing in our state isn't working. The reality is in the last 60 years, maybe a little more than 60 years, we've lost nearly half of our congressional delegation. So from a population perspective, the rest of this country is growing and or the population is shifting at a rate out of our state into other places. And that is a long-term trend that we have to turn. So I'm not saying that we should eliminate either of those programs, but what I do believe it is time to scale those back and reallocate those resources into something, whether it's other programs that grow economic opportunities, whether it is tax reductions, which I believe grow economic opportunities. That's part of this big picture discussion we have. So I'm not debating, as I've spent time downtown St. Louis, it's transformational what has happened over the last 10 to 15 years.
Sure.
But the reality is that if we keep doing what we're doing, we're going to keep getting what we're getting.
And beautiful right downtown.
Now, but a state that continues to lose population, to lose economic opportunities, and in the long run, is not what either one of us want. So
absolutely.
There's definitely a balance.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I truly believe that, you know, we need to find areas within the economic development scheme of things to bring people back to the St. Louis area. And if that's I don't know if it's doing away with income tax. I don't know what it is,
right.
But
there's no silver bullet.
Yeah,
Senator,
exactly.
Right.
We will get there, though. I truly believe we will get there. Thank you.
Thank you, and I do want to just to put this in context. We have got four bills. We've got 2 hours before Senator Pierce kicks us out of here. So we want to keep it going. So Senator Krause,
thank you. Just a few things I want to make sure that we highlight for the people in the room. When we're talking about this, we need to look at the bigger picture. We have $2 billion in liability, meaning the state. Those are issued tax credits out there, and all people have to do is come in and redeem them, and we have to pay them. That's money that's coming out of our budget. Senator, what's the fastest growing part of our budget?
Tax credits.
And currently, we're spending around $675 million every year. That's $675 million that's not going to education. It's not going to other social programs. That's important for us to know at the start of this discussion, and I wanted to make sure everybody knew that. I like one part of your bill that you mentioned
just
here.
One?
Well, I like a lot of parts. You know where I come from. So the stacking. Why is eliminating stacking so important?
Well, one of the things that we've seen and what we've really tried to do, and I'll be honest, it's been a slow process, is understand how the credits work and how the money's spent. And what has happened is, in many cases, not all, but in cases where we've allowed stacking of low-income state, low-income federal, historic state, historic federal, sometimes brownfield, sometimes not, when they stacked all the credits, they literally end up building 900-square-foot apartments for hundreds of thousands of dollars. The most outrageous one is the former senator from Cape used to talk about, nearly $350,000 for an apartment that was less than 1,000 square feet. And let's be honest, that's where I live in Northwest Missouri. You can build a very nice, very comfortable 1,400 square foot home for $130,000 or $140,000. You know, nothing elaborate, but you have a whole, you have an entire home with a two-car garage. My point is that the way that we're spending them today, the way that the money's being spent can be spent better. And the thing that's most important is, as we look to right size these programs, what I've done is I've gone and looked at what other states are doing. Of the 50 states, only 14 states have a low-income housing program. Now, they all have the federal credit that comes in, but only 14 states have a state credit. And of those 14, only two states, so two out of 50 states, actually do dollar-for-dollar match. Everyone else does 25 cents on the dollar, 10 cents, some do 50 cents. They vary by state. My point is that we are expending such a large portion of our dollars there relative to other states. From the historic program, 31 states have a state program. Missouri is by far almost 2-1 over the second closest state. You could take the 13 colonies, add together what they spend, and we still spend more. So my point is we need to right-size those. This is not about eliminating those programs. It's about right-sizing.
One last point, and then we have a lot of people here to testify. Do you know what the average cost is, low-income housing per unit is?
I do not know the average.
The average, and this was as of last year, $155,000 per unit. And like to your point, you can go out and buy a home in most of the communities in Missouri, a pretty nice home for $155,000.
Well, I will humbly submit this to the committee, because you're going to hear a lot of people come and testify and tell you we can't do low-income housing or historic preservation without the state credits, and if you take away the state credits, we're done building projects. I have met a lot of developers in other states, specifically in the low-income housing program, that either one will not do business here because of how, to use their words, how dirty the program is. It's because of the way that it's essentially have slowly become pay to play. Not everyone, so that's a very broad brush. But because of the way that we have elected officials on the commission, how it's driven, that type of a thing, which is all part of what needs to be discussed as well, they don't even want to do business here. But they will tell you they build low-income housing projects and do other renovation projects in many, many states that either don't have a state component or a state component that's not as rich as ours. So it is still possible. You're right. It will not be as robust. And the apartments may not have granite countertops when they're done, but it's still possible. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Senator Sater.
Real quick, after 2018, there will be no corporate income tax.
That's what my proposal would phase it out between now and 2018.
Right. And is that all corporations? Well, Chapter S, C.
In the state of Missouri, if you have a business that flows through to your personal return.
Right.
This would not impact you.
Okay.
That's the key.
I was hoping it might.
Yeah. I'd love to get there. That's like a $2 billion fiscal note.
Actually, like $700 million.
Okay. Well, there we go.
Senator Dixon.
Senator, you mentioned the granite countertops, and I thought I'd just throw out there for everyone's edification that even some of those we paid for don't have them after they're done with the project, right?
There have been a couple instances in which yes, we paid for the project. Once the project had been completed in a certain time period had been met, they were able to take the high-end furnishings out.
And put them somewhere else. Yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions?
That's not the norm, though, Senator. I know what you're saying.
Okay, why don't we do you have any witnesses you want to call, Senator?
You know, I don't know how you want to do this. I don't know if you're doing all the bills and then you do individually, but I will tell you my guess is anyone who's going to reduce tax credits, you're going to have pretty much the same group of folks testifying in opposition today.
And what may be efficient, I believe Senator Lamping's bill also addresses, John. If you want to come up, and in fact, we would ask if you come up and testify. If you're testifying in support broadly for low-income and historic, to, you might as well just come up on Senator Lager's bill now. That way we don't have a duplication here when Senator Lamping presents his bill.
So we have 45 people against mine and none against John's. Okay,
He won't have any opposition. And it'll make Senator Lager sit here a little bit longer, maybe. Anyone wishing to testify in support of the bill? Anyone wish?
Okay, so I actually have another one to go present as well.
Okay.
So I'm
going
to
let
the words of wisdom ring true.
We'll pass it along to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Witnesses wishing to testify in opposition to the Senate bill, Senate Bill 5.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I want to thank you for having me speak to you. While you consider the bill before you, or the bills before you, I'd like for you to take a look at the executive summary from a Missouri Housing Development Commission study that was performed approximately 5 years ago. I come to you to tell you that there is a return on investment on the Affordable Housing State Tax Credit. All of these properties pay property taxes for 15 years for the life of the project. In many of the small towns that I come from near Joplin, Missouri, when I come and tell them what I'm doing and what I'd like to try to provide their community, the mayor is instantly interested in what I've got because of the revenue that his city, that this project will create for his city. Now it creates jobs, there's economic growth. As you guys think about other corporations coming in from outside the state of Missouri, I would encourage you to think about their market research. What do they look at as they consider this Missouri town when they come to town? Does it have enough housing to support the employees that they are going to need to operate their factories and that sort of thing? So there is a return on investment. Yes, there is a liability. Yes, there is a liability, but it's like a savings account because of the return on investment. It creates jobs. It creates opportunity. There are three obstacles to getting out of poverty: affordable housing, affordable transportation, and affordable child care. Now, I've administered a lot of social welfare programs, and now I'm a for-profit developer on the tax credit program. Part of the reason I like this program is because it's a way to help out these workforce families as they struggle to get out of poverty. And I want you to carefully consider the bill before you, and I want you to think about the children in the state of Missouri. We haven't quite figured out how to get people out of poverty with an A to Z how-to book, but I think it starts at school. And most people agree that the free and reduced lunch and breakfast programs are good for our kids as they strive to get an education to become productive members of our society. Where did that person sleep the night before? Where did that child sleep the night before? If they're sleeping in a substandard house, we don't want that. If they're sleeping in a house that mom and dad are struggling to afford and mom and dad are arguing, that child doesn't get a full night's good night's sleep before they get to that free breakfast and as they learn to become a productive member of Missouri. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions for this witness? Senator Lamping.
Okay. So you're here in support of low-income housing tax credit programs, so you don't want to see any changes to them?
Yes, sir.
So is it your thought that if we weren't one of the 14 states that actually has their own program, if we were one of the, I guess, 36 other states that don't have a state-specific program, mm-hmm. would it be your thought that no low-income housing will be built in those in Missouri?
The first thing that would happen is it would still happen. It would happen in probably your larger metro areas only. There is no way many of the small towns in my area could financially put together a package as creatively as we got with as many leveraged other funds possible. It'd just be almost impossible for rural Missouri to put together affordable housing. I've been dead-ended in Arkansas. I've been dead-ended in Kansas. Why? Because there's no state tax credit. It doesn't mean I'm quitting. I've got to get more creative, but there is a great need for this type of housing.
And you also are aware, I'm sure you're aware, but I would just, we're not eliminating the program.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We're seeking to reduce the program. Mm-hmm. And if we were to achieve what Senator Lager suggested or what I suggest, it would still make us one of the, if not the largest, which we are now, mm-hmm. we still might remain the largest mm-hmm. or second largest. Mm-hmm. So this idea that this type of development would not occur, I think it may not occur to the same degree. The projects themselves may not have as great a value, but I think that the ability to meet the need of low-income housing people, it's certainly, it's being met in 36 other states to some degree. Mm-hmm. And I think to suggest that without an unlimited cap or a very, very high cap, that there's some, to the idea of we need to do $140 million of low-income housing mm-hmm. instead of 80 or 70, mm-hmm. I just don't see where that change in those two things will be at the detriment that you might think it would be.
I appreciate your position.
And I yours. And I appreciate you testifying today, too. Yes, it's a very difficult thing to do.
Yes, sir.
Any other questions for the witness, Senator Nasheed?
The economic impact from a job creation standpoint. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at low-income housing development, mm-hmm. it is true to say that you are creating jobs.
Yes, sir.
You create jobs in the areas of construction.
Yes.
So now you have pipe fitters working, mm-hmm. especially at a time when the economy is at its all-time low. Mm-hmm. And, okay, you have masonry guys, mm-hmm. electricians, mm-hmm. plumbers, mm-hmm. Carpentry. You all have all of those different areas.
Yes, ma'am.
Working.
Yes, ma'am.
And when they're working, mm-hmm. When people work, they tend to spend, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So you may have that individual, they may go get an extra microwave oven, mm-hmm. or they may go get an extra flat screen, mm-hmm. right? And so that generates sales tax, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
So it all works together, right?
I mean, it does. It kind of goes back to my return on investment.
Exactly. And then that's what you call creating and moving the economy.
Yes, ma'am. It's a ripple effect.
Exactly. And so, you know, I truly believe that that's what we need to continue to do.
Yes, ma'am.
And we don't need to do less of it.
Yes, ma'am.
We need to do more of it, because when you're able to see individuals purchasing again, then you know that the economy is going into the direction it needs to go into.
Yes.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Yes, ma'am. May I say one sentence?
Right. Yeah.
I'm from Joplin. I was raised in Joplin. Next time you're on the interstate, look at the mile markers and think 7 miles long, 3/4 mile wide. I'm sure you're all well aware of what I'm talking about, our tornado in May 2011. Out of the 8 affordable housing projects that were done in that community to help reconstruct it, I'd venture to say, and it is my opinion, that over half of those projects would not have been viable without the state tax credit. So in a disaster situation, I realize we don't have tons of those, but I know my Parkwood Senior Apartment Project would not have been a financially viable project without that credit.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Yes, sir.
Next witness in opposition.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Richard Sheets. I'm with the Missouri Municipal League, representing 675 municipalities. I'm here kind of to speak broadly on the Historic Preservation Tax Credit. It's a program, a tax credit that's been identified by my members as a very, very important redevelopment tool. Through our policy process every year, it's identified as a very effective program in revitalizing our downtowns, both small and large cities. It's just a wide variety of cities that have used this to bring economic growth to their community. Downtowns have some significant challenges to overcome. Public safety issues because of older buildings that need to be revitalized, and many times it takes extra effort to encourage that investment, because older buildings, and you know our downtowns, we have a lot of older buildings with the same walls connecting, and so it's the whole town's connected. And to bring investment into those communities takes a lot of effort. And the Historic Preservation Tax Credit has been a very important tool to a lot of our cities. I talked to a lot of city managers and city administrators, and they point to this program, these tax credits, the historic preservation tax credit, as the key to bringing that investment to their community, which translates into jobs, into revenue, into the community. This is part of our economic development growth, and I would hate to see it diminished to an extent where it's not going to be effective, because it is very important. And I think you can look at the communities in your area, and you can see where these have been used. We're certainly open for discussion and how we can look and make this program more effective or fit into your plans. But I think we need to maintain a viable historic preservation tax credit program.
Pick any questions?
I have brought some city officials from Boonville come to talk about some of their how they use that locally, not just from my. I'm coming up here living in Jefferson City, but I do have some folks going to talk about how it's used locally and how.
How many witnesses do you have?
I have just one from Boonville.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Senator Lamping.
Thanks, Chairman. So if Missouri didn't have any historic tax credits at all, and they announced that we were going to introduce a new program that had $25 million authorization, would that be a good thing, or would we have not had any historic preservation going on prior to that announcement?
Historic preservation?
So before there were historic tax credits, mm-hmm. were historic buildings renovated?
Well, I'm sure they were, mm-hmm. but to what extent? And to
So going from 0 to 25 would have spurred greater historic redevelopment.
Well, but you have to take that in context. Sure, it would certainly spur greater development, but not to its potential. I mean, cities struggle with because redeveloping a historic property has more challenge than building a from the ground stick built building from the ground. So
are the values of the properties that are purchased by a historic redeveloper, do they have no value?
I can't answer that because I'm not.
Do they have negative value?
Well, sometimes they do. I mean, you do look down towns; they have these older buildings that have significant engineering and work to make them stable and make them viable. But they still have some use.
But they're not free. I mean, they're not waiting. They're not sitting there where anybody can come along and for no cost to them announce a redevelopment project. Right? They're $1 million, or $2 million, or $5 million.
Well, there's cost in many. What I've experienced or I've seen talking to my city officials, the cost of coming is brought about in revitalizing, rehabbing that house, that building, and it's not necessarily the cost of that structure, it's the investment to bring that structure up to code and a safe standard where it could be used.
So the credit does is it reduces the initial capital outlay of the developer.
Uh-huh.
It reduces the risk of the project to the developer.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what it does.
What does? Yes. And I agree. And that's I think that's important.
So the irony I find is that if we were announcing we were going from zero historic tax credits to $25 million tax credits, the crowd would be just as big lining up outside the door telling us that this is a wonderful thing that we're doing. And all we're doing today is we're saying, let's just do less of this. It's not going away. The sponsor and senator has said to leave the room. He's not eliminating the program.
Mm-hmm.
I have a legislation that does not eliminate the program. It still exists.
Right.
All this still goes on. It's a question of prioritizing these dollars. And when you speak to job creation, the gentleman before spoke to job creation, mm-hmm. you're assuming that $10 or $20 or $50 million doesn't go to some other project, some other road, or stay in taxpayers' pockets and get spent and has a greater multiplier effect.
Well,
am I wrong? I mean, where am I wrong in all this? I mean,
I'm not going to say that you're wrong, but I'm.
Wrong. I guess we both agree the historic tax credit program is a good thing.
It is. It is.
It's just the dollars, just the amount.
Well, it's the amount. So I think we need to look at what economic growth and development this spurs and
that. I get it.
Yeah. So I'm not sure the discussion's been there. How much does these credits generate? I mean, if we reduce it, that may reduce the amount of economic growth that will be generated. So if we have...
That assumes that the money wouldn't go to something else that would have a greater multiplier effect. So if we took $50 million away from historic tax credits and buried it in the ground, I would agree that it would have a lower multiplier effect. But if it went to something else, then it would very well have the same or the higher multiplier effect.
Well, I don't know what that something else is. I mean, right now, this program works.
Okay.
Something else. Okay.
I agree. The program works.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? You want to call?
Yes.
Ma'am, do you want to come forward? And make sure everybody please fills out a witness form. You can fill it out afterwards. It's fine.
Are you ready?
Let's proceed.
Good afternoon, Chairman Schmidt, honorable senators, and interested persons here.
Ma'am, I might want to interrupt, and I probably should have announced this. If you have written testimony, please just submit the written testimony. You're free to testify about what you're passionate about, but to the extent you have written testimony, we will distribute that to the committee members for their review.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can I go ahead and read it?
Well, no, I'm asking you not read it, but just testify about how you feel about the program, and then we can distribute written comments.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I'm the mayor of Boonville. Boonville is a small, rural, historic community right down the interstate here. We were founded in 1839 by a woman with 9 children, which is fairly unique. We've always been a working community. We have a lot of assets. We have the Santa Fe Trail. We have the MKT Railroad, the Missouri River, and the Interstate 70. This has all brought sort of a boom-type economy, which has left us with a wonderful downtown. We have a lot of historic buildings in our town. In 1979, the Friends of Historic Boonville did a historic structure survey, and at that time, there were listed with the National Register of Historic Places 7 districts, 20 individual listings of historic buildings, and 400 buildings. That's a lot of buildings for a town of 8,000 people. In fact, I've heard that's more than are listed in St. Louis or Kansas City. So we have a large number of historic buildings. So this is very important to our community. Our city is also the owner of the Kemper campus. Kemper Military School went bankrupt several years ago. The city bought the campus. We now own 8 historic buildings, which we are trying to find a use for. It is part of our identity. My husband and I are fortunate that we can travel around, actually the world, and you'd be surprised how many times when you say, I'm from Boonville, Missouri, they'll say, isn't that where that military school was? What has happened to that? So they're wanting to know, people remember Kemper Military School, so we're trying to revitalize that area, create jobs, do some economic development there. We feel like if you did away with, and I understand you're not doing away with the program, and I appreciate that, we feel like this is a tool that really could help us develop that.
Thank you. Any questions for the witnesses? Thank you for your testimony. And if you want to, get the written testimony, we'll get it to committee members. Thank you. Next witness in opposition to the Senate bill.
I'm Lori Sellers. I'm from Lexington, Missouri. Like Boonville, it's an historic town. We have about 4,700 people who live there. We have 4 historic districts. 2 commercial, or 1 commercial, 2 residential, and Wentworth Military Academy, which is still open, I'm happy to say. My husband happens to be the president of that school. I just want you to take into account the rural towns around Missouri when you consider this, because it really helps. I don't know what we would do without these tax credits. Absolutely, these projects would not happen without these tax credits. We bring people from out of the town into town to invest in our community because of these tax credits. We have a woman from Kansas. She sells airplanes for a living. She chooses to spend her money investing it in Lexington. She's renovated many buildings, both commercial and residential. There are viable businesses in those commercial businesses because of that. That's the kind of thing that keeps our town going. It's vitally important to us. And I hope you take that into account. I wrote down some of the words I heard earlier, calling it entitlement. You have to decrease our exposure. Someone called it liability. I don't think any of those words apply to our town when it comes to these tax credits. It is nothing but positive. It brings money into the town that wouldn't otherwise come into our town. I think that's all positive. And, you know, to spend a dollar on tax credits is more than a dollar in value to the state, because you're leveraging that private sector investment. To me, that makes sense. That's good math to me. I just want to add that my husband is the seventh generation to grow up in Lexington. We're now raising our three kids there. They're the eighth generation in our family to grow up in Lexington. Will they come back to Lexington and live there and raise their kids? I don't know the answer to that. But these tax credits are an important part of what our future will look like in Lexington. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the witness? Thank you for coming here today. Next witness in opposition.
Thank you, Senators. My name is Bill Hart. I represent the Missouri Alliance for Historic Preservation. We're a statewide nonprofit whose mission is to help citizens preserve and maintain a sense of community and for future generations. Missouri Preservation basically has a three-pronged approach to our mission of education, advocacy, and recognition. Our chief educational program is our statewide preservation conference, an educational conference that moves to a different town in Missouri each year. Our chief advocacy program is our list of most endangered historic places in Missouri. That's typically announced during preservation month, May, and is sort of a last call to Missouri citizens. We accept nominations to our most endangered list from citizens throughout the state. Our big advocacy push is our statewide preservation honor awards, which we present here in the state capitol early in the spring each year. It honors and recognizes the accomplishments of historic people who've made significant contributions to the field of historic preservation statewide. Preservation and restoration of historic buildings makes sense. It makes good economic sense. It ensures that valuable housing stock and building stock in our downtowns remain viable and don't end up on the slag heap or in a landfill somewhere. Historic preservation increases property values, and its studies show that buildings in historic neighborhoods are assessed at higher amounts than their counterparts. It's also proven that cities and towns that respect their historic heritage reap the benefits of historic preservation and historic tourism dollars. As Missouri Preservation's field representative, I'm charged with providing assistance and information to community leaders and residents statewide. These people contact me almost on a daily basis, trying to discover some way of putting historic buildings back into use and making economic development possible in Missouri's cities and towns.
Okay, thank you, sir. We're going to have to open it up for questions. Thank you. Any questions for this witness? We appreciate you coming here today and your testimony. If you have any written materials, be happy to leave them here.
Thanks.
Anyone else wishing to testify in opposition?
Good afternoon. My name is Jackie Lukic. I am the Director of Advocacy for an organization called NAMI St. Louis. We are an affiliate of the largest grassroots mental health organization in the nation called National Alliance on Mental Illness. I'm here today not so much to oppose this bill, but to express a concern. I want to address make three points about low-income housing tax credits. But my main point is that we need to preserve low-income housing tax credits. So point number one that I want to make is that there's a great need for what's called supportive and affordable housing for people with mental illness in the state of Missouri. To illustrate this need, I can give you two other points. One is that there are a large number of mental health organizations that have made it their priority this year to address building of supportive new supportive housing units for people with mental illness. My organization is one. Our state office, NAMI Missouri, is another. The Coalition of Community Mental Health Centers is another. The Behavioral Health Network of Greater St. Louis is another. And an organization or a partnership called the St. Louis Partnership for Mental Health and Housing Transformation is another. This partnership, which is just for the city of St. Louis, has commissioned a report, an analysis of how many supportive housing units are needed in the city of St. Louis for people with mental illness. And that report said that 782 new units are needed. And it also said that half of that, 391, are to be newly constructed or rehab units. I see that my time is almost up, but I just want to say I'm really interested in seeing that you really don't pare back low-income housing tax credits really far, because we just got a leg up in terms of a special needs set-aside through MHDC. And it has started to help not-for-profits be competitive at getting these projects funded. And if you pare it back too much, I fear that, you know, we will no longer have the ability to be competitive.
Thank you for your.
So I thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your testimony and your perspective. Any questions for the witness?
Real quick.
Senator Sater.
Would you say that mental health treatment is overfunded or underfunded in the state of Missouri?
Definitely underfunded.
That's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to find money to give to more programs that are very important.
Yeah, I understand that, and I appreciate that comment, but I would say just one thing. Housing is critical to helping people with mental illness stay stable in our communities.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for coming here today.
Thank you.
Next witness in opposition.
Thank you, Senator, members of the committee. My name is Jim Farrell, representing the Alliance for Investment, Jobs, and Preservation. And I think the point that I want to focus on, and because a lot of talk has been talked about the cap, and that cap was reduced in 2009 by 30-40%, down from the highs of 180 down to 140. But what has not been focused on is the investment that comes with this incentive. This program generates $500 million to $1 billion of economic activity each and every year. It generates 4 to 5 times the amount of the incentive. And this is producing the jobs, this is producing income to the state, sales tax to the state, as well as the benefits of taking vacant, abandoned properties that have been vacant many times for decades and puts them back on the tax rolls, provides property tax increases that go to the states, and provides the valuable jobs that have been in the depression over the last several years. So I wanted to focus that, you know, it's not the payout that is often mentioned here about the tax credit, but it is the private investment. And it is an incentive that drives private investment that has benefited over 75 communities throughout the state, and is one of the few programs that has really touched every size community in this state, regardless of urban, rural, or main streets and town squares.
Thank you. Any questions for this witness? Thank you for coming today.